BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening.
So in today's episode of our podcast, we are going to be talking to Professor Tony Chu and his colleague Peter about rosacea. Peter and Tony, can you introduce yourselves and give a little bit about your backgrounds and just kind of what you do, if that's okay?
Okay, I'm Tony Chu. I am retired now, but I was the head of dermatology for Imperial College for some time and was a consultant at the Hammersmith Hospital and Ealing Hospitals for about 38 years. I retired fully in 2019, just before lockdown, which was wonderful. And so now I spend most of my time keeping bees, doing pottery and doing the garden. But I'm also the chair of the Acne and Rosacea Association UK, and therefore try to do a certain amount of education to both healthcare professionals and also patients on what acne is and what rosacea is.
That sounds really good. Sounds very interesting. And what about yourself, Peter?
Hi, my name's Peter Roberts. I'm actually the managing director of SkinMed, who have sponsored the aforementioned charity. My background is pharmaceutical. I'm a biochemist, microbiologist. Started work for Beecham's in 1984 as a microbiologist. Left GlaxoSmithKline as it became in 2001 as the head of commercial operations. And I went back to the science, created SkinMed in 2001. And here we are. 24 years later, we have specific interests in acne and rosacea, hence our fruitful relationship with Tony.
Yeah, that sounds really good. So the next kind of question that I have is, what exactly is rosacea and how would we go about diagnosing it?
Okay. Now, rosacea is actually a very difficult condition because there are two sides to it. On the one side, you've got the vascular side, where you've got flushing, and on the other side, you've got the inflammatory side, where you get papules and pustules and even cysts that look just a bit like acne. The hallmark of rosacea is flushing, and the flushing is usually facial. It often spares around the eyes. It lasts more than 10 minutes, and it often is associated with a burning or stinging sensation of the skin. And there are a whole host of triggers, and we'll talk about triggers later when we talk about advice to patients. The most important thing is that the flushing side, the vascular side, has specific treatments that do work, but the vast majority of treatments are directed towards the inflammatory side, and these are all the antibiotics and most of the creams that you use. And there are, you know, you think about rosacea as being an adult disease, highest incidence between 30 and 50. But in fact, there's a very important early peak in incidence in the late teens and early 20s. So you can get it coincidentally with acne. So you could start with acne and then go straight on to develop rosacea. And of course, you can also get seborrheic dermatitis in the mix as well. So you've got to be careful with what you're dealing with. The most important thing is to ask the patient exactly what symptoms they get, what precipitates it, and make sure they've got flushing, because there are lots of conditions that cause redness of the skin, particularly the face, which are not rosacea. And I'm amazed at the number of patients I see that are sent up with a diagnosis of rosacea who don't have it. They have something completely different.
And would this present differently in people of different skin color? So in darker skin type, does it present differently at all?
To an extent, no. You know, if you think about rosacea, you normally think about a fairly pale complexion, sort of European skin. But I've seen patients from the Mediterranean, from the Middle East, even Afro-Caribbean patients with rosacea. And the same thing happens. Obviously, the darker your skin, the less obvious the flushing is, because you can feel the skin burning and stinging. If you look carefully, you can see some redness, but it's often not as obvious.
Mm-hmm. And often, I think, sometimes when patients with darker skin type, the flushing is not a red colour, it's maybe more of a purpley colour, or absolutely, a kind of almost a darker kind of colour on their skin rather than a kind of bright red. So it can be hard to distinguish sometimes. Yeah. And what exactly causes rosacea? Do we kind of know the cause yet?
Wonderful. Nobody actually knows. The big theories that are out there, one is it Demodex folliculorum, the skin mite that is causing it, and that's been proven not to be the case. If you give oral ivermectin, you can get rid of all the mites in the skin and you still have rosacea. The second big one was Helicobacter pylori. Is it associated with that? And patients often found that when they took the antibiotics to settle the Helicobacter, that the inflammatory side of rosacea got better, which is exactly what you'd expect, because of course antibiotics will suppress inflammation. We do know that one of the endogenous antimicrobial peptides, that's the cathelicidin called LL37, is elevated in the skin of patients with rosacea. And we know that LL37 does control vasculature within the skin. And it's possible that could be related, but we don't know what causes the LL37 to increase. But it could give us some clues as to potential treatments.
Like down the line in the future of that, they would develop it.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then my next question is what kind of other things do we need to consider for a patient that might present with kind of redness, flushing, burning on the face? What kind of other things might we need to exclude in that presentation?
Okay, lots of things will cause facial redness. Once again, the hallmark of rosacea is the flushing. And if you've got flushing, you've probably got rosacea. If you haven't got flushing, then you haven't. You've just got a red face. And you know, a lot of patients with acne will have the spots, but they'll have a background redness of the skin. That's not rosacea, that is acne. But of course, you can get rosacea with acne as well. Atopic dermatitis, particularly in the late teens, early 20s, can often present with quite severe facial redness. Once again, it's persistent redness. It doesn't flush. Mm-hmm. Lupus erythematosus, obviously you get the malar erythema, which is the hallmark of systemic lupus. Seborrheic dermatitis, when it's bad, can cover the whole face. You know, the hallmark is the scaliness within the eyebrows, mm-hmm. perhaps in the ears, on the scalp, but the whole face can go red. And one of my favourite diseases is a lovely condition called ulerythema oophorogenes. It's an atrophic form of keratosis pilaris. It causes facial redness, which is really quite marked. It's often familial. I had a brother and sister who both presented with facial redness, sent to me with rosacea and they didn't have it. The important thing with that is that because it's an atrophic form of keratosis pilaris, it can cause scarring alopecia. And so men can lose hair from their beard area, women can lose eyebrows. And so an important diagnosis to make, and it responds beautifully to a topical retinoid.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So like if it was somebody maybe who had lost kind of hair follicles, it maybe not be rosacea, but this keratosis pilaris. That is also a mouthful to say.
Erythema.
Well.
Yeah.
Yes. So the next kind of question that I have to ask is about treatments. What kind of treatments are there available to treat rosacea, and how do they kind of work?
Now, as you'll all know, there are hundreds of treatments for rosacea, and the vast majority are directed at the inflammatory type. You know, the Europeans have muddied everything by classifying rosacea into four types. So this is type 2, the papular-pustular form.
Yeah, papular-pustular.
And almost all the treatments are directed at that, and there's good evidence base for those treatments. So you start topically, and you'd start with something like topical ivermectin, Soolantra, topical metronidazole. We know that topical retinoids will work. We know that pimicrolimus topically will work. Other topical antibiotics can work as well. But you've got to be a bit careful because the skin in patients with rosacea is much more sensitive to anything you put on the skin. So anything which is slightly irritant will make the rosacea worse. Mm-hmm. So an alcoholic solution with an antibiotic would be a disaster. When those fail, then you go on to systemic treatments, and these are mainly the antibiotics. And do remember, there's no infection in rosacea. Even the pustules are sterile, and therefore, it's unlike acne, where you're trying to kill the cutibacterium acnes. We're using the antibiotics because they have major anti-inflammatory action. They downregulate a whole host of inflammatory cytokines. And so the tetracyclines, and we have the low-dose tetracyclines as well, which don't have an antimicrobial effect, but do have an anti-inflammatory effect. Those that don't respond to typical tetracyclines, you can use systemic erythromycin. In fact, I'd avoid erythromycin, go for clarithromycin. It's a much better drug, much better absorbed, better tolerated. Another drug that is very good is trimethoprim in patients who are more difficult to get under control. And I've even, in patients with more severe forms of inflammatory rosacea, I've used oral metronidazole, and that works extremely well. But none of these will have any effect on flushing, and that's terribly, terribly important. Mm-hmm. If you've got somebody with type 1 rosacea with just flushing and no inflammatory spots, it does not respond to any of these topical agents, and it does not respond to oral antibiotics. An old teacher of mine used to tell me that if you gave very high doses of tetracycline, we're talking about 2 to 3 grams of oxytetracycline a day, you control flushing. And he was wrong, because it doesn't. Mm. The only things that will have any impact on flushing, and these are agents that have evidence base, are two topical therapies. One is Synchrorose, which Peter could tell you more about, and that contains MSM, as well as a product called Silymarin, which is an extract of the sour thistle, and that can downregulate the vasculature and calm the skin down. And that has been shown in clinical trials to work in reducing facial flushing and erythema. The other is topical bromonidine, mm-hmm. and that you all know about. In the old days, the Americans would get bromonidine, which was used for glaucoma as an eye preparation. They'd mix it with some moisturizer and slap it on the skin. And it worked in reducing redness beautifully, but you then got terrible rebound flushing that could be very persistent. And when Galderma launched Nevazo, the one thing I said to them was, do you get rebound flushing? And they said no, and they were wrong, because they do. And it's caused a major, major problem. So the vast majority of patients avoid it. Mm. So, you know, the only thing that you can really use topically that works well is the Synchrorose. As far as systemic drugs, you can use alpha agonists. And my favorite is clonidine. I've been using it for the last 40 years. You need to start at a small dose and slowly increase the dose. So start at 50 micrograms three times a day. You can go up to 75 micrograms three times a day. And it can work incredibly well. For those that don't respond well to clonidine, moxonidine is another option, 200 milligrams daily. And then in those that don't respond or only partially respond, you can either use beta blockers or add beta blockers. And my favorite one is carvedilol, which is used at 25 milligrams BD or TDS. And they can control the flushing in a lot of patients. Now, some patients, you just can't with those drugs. And I found that in patients who have really very severe flushing, I've reached for the antimalarial drugs. And the best one is Mepocrin, a difficult drug to actually source these days. And it does have the disadvantage of making the skin go yellow. But it can work incredibly well. And I'm a great believer that in patients who have been treated with Roaccutane for their acne, they can develop secondary rosacea. And I think the Roaccutane actually induces the rosacea in these patients. And those patients do very, very well on Mepocrine. The other product that you could try, and I've had great successes with, are the mandelic acid peels. And mandelic acid, when applied to the skin, is absorbed deep into the skin, where it developed into mandelate, and that has a vasoconstrictive effect. And if you use these peels on a regular basis, it can keep flushing under control.
Mm. And for some of these treatments, like how you were saying about colanitine and beta blockers and things like that, is that something that we can just ask the GP to initiate, or would that have to be initiated by us in secondary care?
I think the vast majority you can use in secondary care. You know, most people have used colanitine for hypertension, etc. They know it's a safe drug to use. They know the side effects. Drugs such as Mepocrine, no, that would probably have to go through to secondary care. But things like Synchrorose, I believe it can be prescribed now. I don't know, but you can certainly buy it over the counter, and therefore, you know, just go to the chemist store, go online and buy it.
Okay, that's good to know. The other question I had when you were talking about different treatments is you were talking about different kinds of rosacea. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
Yeah, well, if you look at the European lot, in 2004, they decided to reclassify rosacea, which I think has muddied the water. You know, effectively, there are two types of rosacea. You've got the vascular rosacea with flushing, which can be a standalone disease. You may never get the inflammatory side, or you've got the inflammatory side, which is coincidental or follows on from the vascular side. So you can't develop inflammatory rosacea without flushing. You know, the two go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. The other two types are the phytomatous type. Now, to my mind, and I was brought up with the fact that phytomas were a side effect of inflammatory rosacea. You can't develop the phytomas without inflammatory rosacea, and it's not a common event. It's more common in men than women, but it's a fairly rare problem. And it's just something you can prevent by properly treating the inflammatory rosacea. And of course, the phytomas, you can get affected at different parts of the body. It can affect the nose, it can affect the forehead, the ears, or even the chin. You know, very important to try to avoid it. Once you've got it, the only treatment really is surgical, mm-hmm. surgically debride the skin so you can actually get back to a normal sort of feature. Yeah. And the fourth type is ocular rosacea. And the funny thing with ocular rosacea, it can precede other forms of rosacea. So you can have the ocular signs with conjunctivitis, blepharitis, for years before you develop rosacea itself. Whether that is part of the rosacea, I'm not sure, but it can be a serious problem. It can affect up to 25% of patients with rosacea, and in a tiny percentage, it can go on to keratitis and even blindness, and it is listed as one of the causes of blindness.
So is it worthwhile, if a patient does have rosacea, asking them to go to like a local for a local eye test or something like that, just to make sure that their vision is okay and that there's no problems there?
I think it's fairly obvious. You know, they've got sore red eyes, and so if they've got that, then yes, they okay. ought to see an ophthalmologist and get some proper treatment. But it's something that I don't think is difficult to diagnose.
Because it's fairly obvious.
You should be able to see it, yeah.
Yeah,
just an interesting point on that, Tony. When people are asked if they have gritty eyes or irritation of the eyes, you get something like 50% of rosacea sufferers actually, when asked, declare it. So I think the incidence of the ocular side is probably greater than thought. It's not something that people discuss when they're talking about rosacea, but just thought I'd make that point.
Yeah, because I think we're oftentimes very focused on the physical you know, what we can see physically on the skin that we might not ask people, oh, are you having, you know, problems with your eyes? Are you having a lot of discharge from your eyes? As you say, Tony, and Peter, about the grittiness or the kind of irritation in the eyes. We might not ask that as kind of dermatologists because we're interested in the skin. So the next kind of question that I had was just about kind of talking about through with patients about how they can best manage their condition. And quite often us as nurses will maybe be involved in kind of educating the patients about things they might need to avoid. What sort of things might we need to be saying or advising the patients about?
I think the most important thing is not to go for a bland diet and tell them to avoid spicy foods and hot drinks, because it's absolute rubbish. And the number of patients I've seen who've been told, no, you can't go and have a curry, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do the other. And it's irrelevant for that particular patient. If you actually look at the figures, I think it's about 80% of patients will get a flare of their rosacea in some light. Sometimes with embarrassment and also with hot, with heat itself. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the incidence of exacerbations of rosacea with spicy foods and hot drinks, it's down to 50%. So the majority of patients, you know, I've got patients who will have a Vindaloo curry, but they can't use a face cream because that irritates the skin. So the most important thing is to get patients to actually have a diary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important as well, because it's nice to know when they get the flushes. I've got patients who will flush in the morning, other patients who will only flush at night, and that will tend to dictate when you want to give the major anti-flushing sort of drugs. Mm-hmm. But also they'll be able to tell what will induce a flush, whether it comes on a few minutes after alcohol, after spicy foods, after hot drinks, etc. And you've got to base your advice on that diary. So if the diary says, no, I'm fine with everything, but when I go in the sunshine, it brings it up really badly, then they've got to use a significant sunblocks and a hat, etc.
A hat.
But if they do get a flush with spicy foods, then yes, avoid that. But, you know, never give blanket diets or blanket advice to all patients, because they're all different.
Yeah, I think it's been good to remember the unique individual. You know, as you say, there might be somebody that it might be cold foods that actually makes their skin worse.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And that's a really good point to remember. And I think diaries is really good. I like having patients having diaries because it helps me kind of gauge, okay, when is a good time to give treatment? Because there's not a point of me giving a treatment that they're never going to take because it doesn't work for their life.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And then the next question that I have is about if there's kind of any newer treatments down the pipeline for rosacea, or kind of any new studies or anything coming out about rosacea treatment in the future.
Not that I'm aware of. Obviously, there are things that are coming through. I think this whole thing with LR37 is interesting, and I think it could generate new medical treatments. I think things like the chemical peels, etc., are very important, and it's something that a lot of dermatologists have no idea about, because it's not something that's really on their radar. And of course, Peter has a new product coming out, which I think sounds very exciting. So I'll leave Peter to describe that.
Well, I briefly will mention it's called Rosagate Professional. We do enapeel mandelic peels, which we deliver the mandelate deep into the skin because it can have a vasoconstrictive effect. We also put MSM deep into the skin with that peel because that can inhibit vasoendothelial growth factor, which we know rosacea sufferers hyper-respond to, and that's what leads to the excessive vascularization. But Rosagate Professional is a functional cream which is applied in medical clinics and then an invisible mask is put on. And its focus is LL37, Tony. So it's actually... So thank you for bringing that on. But Rosagate will target various parts of the vascular development of rosacea, whether it's interleukins, cytokines, kallikreins, and also LL37. And for the first time, Rosagate, Synchrorose, and Enapil MA were very much focused on vascular rosacea. But this new Rosagate professional not only will target better the vascular symptoms, but also the papules and the pustules. So we're broadening our scale. Rosacea is a big area for us, hence we like to support events like this. And but I would also say, Tony, you should really make a plug for this training course.
Absolutely.
Your training course.
Yeah, well, you can tell us a little bit about that, Tony. That'd be good.
Okay, well, the charity itself, we've produced a training program for healthcare professionals, and this is both webinars that you can sit and listen to, as well as printed information, and it tells you everything you want to know about acne and rosacea. We need to update it because of one or two new products that have come out, but it goes through a lot of the controversies. For instance, the controversy was Roaccutane, but I think it gives you a fantastic grounding for treating acne and rosacea properly. Let's face it, there are so many patients who are not treated properly, or at least inadequately. So the training, I think, is fantastic. We spent a lot of time doing it. Me sitting in front of cameras, sort of talking eruditely, but I think it is probably one of the best teaching aids that is out there for both acne and rosacea. And how can people access it, Peter?
Well, you can go onto the Skin Med Academy, but the ARA UK website also has access to that training course where you can sign up for it. It is £300 to do the course. That goes to the charity. If you're using our protocol, sometimes that allows me to give you a bit of discount against it. So I might pay a contribution towards the course if you're doing our protocols. It is 40 hours of level 7 CPD. So you can get 40 hours of continuing professional development. And you become an accredited charity approved acne and rosacea treatment centre at the end of it, which is what I believe, Tony, you'd like to have 400 or 500 of those across the UK.
Absolutely. And you do get certification. And I think that the charity would then identify people who have done the course so that it can advise people, patients, you know, where they can get the best treatment.
And does it also help support patients as well who have acne and rosacea as well?
Yeah, it does indeed. We're revamping that. We haven't done an awful lot on the patient side. There's information there for them. But what we're planning to do is to have a blogging site so patients can blog and ask questions, and also an updating site so we can tell patients what's new.
That sounds really good. And that sounds really good about the course as well. I'm sure some of our members will find that really useful for them and useful in their roles. So I think the next bit that I've got is just kind of bringing everything to a close. So maybe just giving a quick bullet point summary of kind of maybe three things to remember at the end of the podcast. I was like three little nice things to remember. It makes things easy to remember at the end of a long talking session to have three highlights. So is there three things that either of you think that we should kind of put as a summary towards the end of what we've learned today and what we've discussed today?
Okay, number one, if you don't have flushing, you don't have rosacea. It's terribly important because the number of patients who are told they have rosacea because they've got red faces is terrible. Number two, most of the treatments, all the antibiotic treatments, do not have any effect on flushing. And therefore, you've really got to go for something like Synchroze or one of the alpha agonists. And thirdly, everyone's individual. So never give blanket advice to patients. You've got to individualize it to the individual patient.
Thank you. That's really good points. And I think, Peter, you said you can contact the Acne and Rosacea UK via their website. Is that correct? Is that where people would go to kind of contact or find out more information?
Yeah, the arauk.co.uk. You can go on there and register, and there's a form you can fill in. I think there's a telephone line number as well. Or you can actually contact SkinMed, because we tend to monitor the course, which our software that's being used. So it is on the SkinMed Academy as well, along with Professor Chu's Scar Masterclass, which is everything you ever wanted to know about scars, including acne scars. And that's 40 hours of level 7 CPD as well.
So lots of things that you both can bring to the table. That's very nice and very kind. Well, it was lovely speaking to you both, and hopefully we'll speak again very soon. And yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.